This is Fresh Air. I'm Sedge Thompson, here from San Francisco, while Terry Gross continues her midwinter break. My guest today is the actress and singer Elaine Stritch. Her performances in Pal Joey and Bus Stop attracted the attention of film producer David Selznick, who cast her in Farewell to Arms. She was later noticed by Noel Coward, who wrote the musical Sail Away for her. Her extensive theatrical career includes appearances in the Stephen Sondheim musical Company, renowned for her rendition of The Ladies Who Lunch. She's currently in the series on cable TV called Two's Company. She's also portrayed the character of Mrs. McGee on The Cosby Show and Victoria Principal's mother in the CBS film Sparks. Woody Allen chose her to replace Maureen O'Sullivan when he needed to shoot his entire film September a second time around. In September, she portrayed an aging actress whose powerful personality overwhelmed her daughter, as portrayed by Mia Farrow. She came by to talk with us about her current role in the American Playhouse production of Sense and Sensibility by Richard Nelson. The play threads the story of a June afternoon at an Adirondack estate in 1937 with a June afternoon in 1986 at the same estate, set amongst an East Coast literary world of upper-class, leftist, political, and personal battles. Elaine Stritch portrays the character Eleanor in 1986, with Gene Simmons as Marianne and Tom Eldridge as Eddie. When she read the script with two good female roles, I asked Elaine Stritch if she actually wanted to portray the other character, Marianne.
I have finally smartened up in my career, and I have come to the conclusion that I should do as I'm told. And by that I mean that if someone who I consider to be good at his job comes to me and says, Elaine, this is a part that you should play, I play it. It was very interesting. It's taken me a long time to find this out. When I was in drama school, I did it instinctively. I listened to Irwin Piscator. I listened to Herbert Berghoff, I listened to Stella Adler, I listened to all my teachers, and I did as I was told, and I was wonderful. And as soon as I got kind of smarty pants and out on Broadway, and I think I should do this, this would be a good thing for me to do. It doesn't work that way with me. I don't want to say this, make this a general rule for young actresses or anything who may be listening to me. I just feel that I am the kind of actress that should find good people, strong people, intelligent people, good directors, good producers, and do as I'm told.
So the reputation for contentiousness that developed was from working with people who weren't good directors then.
That's right. Because if you're left all alone and you're working with people that aren't, that don't know as much. You know, Noel Coward told me something very valuable one day. I didn't realize how valuable it was at the time due to my youth. But he told me never to work with people who knew less than I did. Because if I did, I would make nothing but enemies. It's a pretty strong thought there, but it's true. It really is true. If you work with people that don't know as much as you do, they're going to dislike you. Because in the course of in the working experience, it's going to come out that you're smarter than they are. And nobody who isn't smart wants anybody who's smarter around them. Have you ever noticed that?
From time to time.
Yes, they get angry. And and of course, as I said to Noel Coward, my God, where am I going to find all these smart people? You know, he said, they'll happen. Just don't work down, work up, or don't work.
Noel Coward wrote much of Sail Away for you.
And yes, he did indeed. It was one of the great experiences of my life to have a man of that stature and talent and sensitivity, and the wonder of the man was unbelievable. And he, to have him write a musical for you is no small compliment, no small tribute. It was terrific.
I understand he kept expanding your role of Mimi for you, just kept expanding it. And I wonder what it was, what do you think it was that he heard in you that he wanted to write for?
I think Noel discovered that a woman who is funny can also be vulnerable and sensitive and frightened and, you know, all those other good things. And I think he loved the combination of a woman who, you know, funny women aren't supposed to fall in love. Have you ever noticed that? They're just supposed to be the life of the party, but they're never supposed to, have a serious relationship with the opposite sex. I've always found that. I think it's changing now. God knows. You know, it was very interesting. In musical comedy especially, there used to be a funny lady and there used to be a romantic lady. And if you go back and look at your musicals, and in Noel's musicals as well, you've got, I think they used to call them soubrettes. you know?
Mm-hmm.
There was always the funny lady who stopped the show the second to closing number, right? And she was the hotsy-totsy, flirtatious, goofy broad that everybody had a good time with. I don't mean that in the sense that it might mean today. I mean, she was a barrel of laughs. And then there was terribly elegant woman appeared all over the place and just was the woman who was in love. And they were lots of violins played in the pits when she came on. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then Miss Jazbo came on, got all the laughs, and waltzed off with nobody at the end of the of the musical. But Noel thought it would be interesting to have that funny lady fall in love. And that's what he developed in Sail Away. And I must say it worked.
He wrote once about your performance that it was nothing short of miraculous, and that you sang something very strange, so movingly that he almost cried.
Yes,
and
well.
I'd like to...
He wasn't hard to make cry, really. I don't consider that such a tribute. He was a very sensitive man. I'm thrilled with the compliment.
I'd like for all of us to hear just a bit of that song.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much. You've done your homework, haven't you, Sedge?
This is something very strange.
Meet me here at 8:30.
Okay, Johnny.
Okay, Mimi.
This is not a day like any other day. This is something special and apart. Something to remember when the coldness of December chills my heart. Something very strange is happening to me. Every face I see seems to be smiling. All the sounds I
It's a pleasure to hear that. It's a
That was great fun. Thank you. I haven't heard it in so long. Beautiful song. I love that song. There's a line in the end of that song. Tinker, tailor, soldier, sailor, beggarman or thief, every single leaf on every tree seems to be aware of something in the air. And if only I were younger, I'd put ribbons in my hair. I think that is so wonderful. And so Noel Coward, I can't stand it. This simple, sweet side of Noel Coward. Less sophisticated side of Noel Coward. It was lovely, lovely song.
How have you used your voice differently from the time of singing in musical theater like that to working in close mic situations like the movies or television shows?
Well, I don't know. Unless I'm told to come down a peg or two, I don't pay any attention to it. I have a big voice, and I have a lot of projection in my voice. I had an experience when I did that movie with Woody Allen, which was a glorious experience.
Called September.
Yes, and I've always said that Woody Allen directs by just being there, which I think is quite a compliment. I mean, he's just there, and you want to please him. And if you've got the talent to do it, it'll happen. It's the kind of director he is. His observance of you directs you. Do you understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's quite extraordinary.
You objected to a dress that you once had to wear. A couple of them, because it didn't make you feel pretty enough to be funny.
Yes, and I said, I suppose you've heard that a million times before, Woody, but I have to look pretty in order to be funny. And he said, no, I've never heard that before. And that was his only comment, and then we went to work.
Could you elaborate a bit on that?
Well, yes, I'd be happy to, and every woman in the world will know what I'm talking about, and probably a few men. If I go to a party, for instance, and I don't look sensational, I don't open up. I mean, I don't perform well, because I don't have the confidence of my body and my hair and my face and everything looking feminine and attractive and desirable and wonderful. And if I don't feel good, then I can't make anybody else feel good. You understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So did then Woody Allen allow you to look pretty?
Well, I didn't look like I wanted to look, but I was convinced that I looked right for the character. And once I get comfortable with the character, then everything's okay.
My guest is actress Elaine Stritch. She's appearing in the American Playhouse production of Sensibility and Sense. She can also be seen on The Cosby Show as Mrs. McGee. What was work on the set with Woody Allen like when particularly everybody had to do the entire movie again?
It was disciplined. It had to be disciplined because there were a lot of actresses that were there that had done it, including Mia and Diane Wiest. And that's hard to do. That's hard. And it's also hard to be a new girl in town and have to do it for the first time with people who were doing it for the second time. It was, but we got through it, and, you know, he creates a very disciplined workmanlike atmosphere, and, you know, you want to do good for him. So I did the best I could, and he was very pleased, and so was I. I was just heartsick the movie wasn't a success. From a point of view of my career, my God, you know, if that had been Hannah and her sisters, I'd be, you know, I'd have a larger mantelpiece, I think. You know what I mean? I am now eating the other piece of my cake from London.
I want to ask you a bit about the cake that you're eating. You need to keep fueled up all the time.
Yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't be such a brat about all this. I have to have a little fix, as they say, every few hours because I'm diabetic. And between, you know, like at tea time, between lunch and supper, I have to have a little, you know, cookie, piece of cake or something, just to make sure my blood sugar stays normal with the amount of insulin that I've taken in the morning.
Yeah, you wrote a book called Living with Diabetes and Damn It, Having Fun.
Yes.
And the title also is Am I Blue?
Yes.
How did the title Am I Blue come
about? The title came about because when you take your blood test to determine what your blood sugar is, you have these little sticks. And when the stick is nice and blue, it means your blood sugar is lovely. And when it gets real dark, 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 indigo blue, then you're in a little bit of trouble. Then you have to watch your sugar intake, or carbohydrate intake, I should say. But that's where actually my husband, who's died in 1982, and he was a very funny guy, wonderful guy, his name was John Bay, and he took my... He was looking at the stick one day, and I said from the other room, Am I Blue? And he said, that's a great title for your book. So that's what I called it.
I was struck by the role that alcohol has played in a number of the roles that you have been in, always holding a drink, a cigarette. And I suppose, especially now as a diabetic, this is something that you've had to change. What when you play somebody such as Diane in September, slowly becoming inebriated over a Ouija board,
mm-hmm.
Reminiscing about your past lovers and lives. How do you envision yourself? Do you bring something from a moment of soberness, looking at other people who've had too much to drink, or something from your own experience of having drunk a lot?
Oh, something from my own experience, absolutely. And boy, do I have a lot of that. I love to drink. I mean, it was one of my favorite things in the world, and also it became a little bit too much of a necessity. I took a drink to go on the stage. I took a drink before I did a scene in a movie. I was a dependent on alcohol, and I am not anymore. And it was a wonderful discovery, marvelous adventure I'm having at this point in my life. I was too frightened. I needed a drink in order to get courage. You know, the old, I never have understood that expression, Dutch courage, but never mind. I don't care if I ever do. But I did depend on it because it made me feel better and made me feel more courageous and gave me guts. And then I got to a diabetes, schmiabetes. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about psychologically. I got to, and emotionally, I got to a point in my life where I wanted to know whether I could do all this swell stuff without the help of a drug of any kind. And I've proven that I can, and it's made me gloriously happy.
You were cast as the role of Joanne in the Stephen Sondheim
Another boozer. Another boozer.
In Company, and you went with, and you sang about the ladies who lunch.
Absolutely. Another vodka stinger.
And I'd like to remind everybody a bit about this role, the ladies who lunch.
I'd like to propose a toast. Here's to the ladies who lunch. Everybody laugh.
lounging in their caftans and planning a brunch on their own behalf. Off to the gym, then to a fitting, claiming their fat and looking grim, 'cause they've been sitting, choosing a hat. Does anyone still wear a hat? I'll drink to that. Here's to the girls who stay smart, aren't they a gas? Rushing to their classes in optical art, wishing it would pass. Another long, exhausting day, another $1,000, a matinee, a pinter play, perhaps a
piece of Mahler. I'll drink to that. Did you ever hear the story about the when I asked Steve Sondheim what Mahler was?
No.
I love the reading that, Sedge. I think that's one of... no. I went to him one day, and you know, Mahler was kind of ahead of his time. And, of course...
We're talking Gustav here, right?
We're talking Gustav. And Steve was ahead of his time always on everything. Mr. Smartass of all time. And he thought it would be a good idea to put Mahler in his lyric because Mahler was going to become terribly well-known. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know who Gustav Mahler. I didn't know that Mahler was Gustav Mahler. And when he said a piece of Mahler, there used to be a place on Broadway, I think there maybe still is, where they served Mahler pastry. This is a true story. You think I'm making it up,
uh-uh.
Don't you? All right. So I said, I thought that that meant a matinee, a pinter play, perhaps a piece of Mahler. So these ladies go to the corner after seeing the pinter play and have a piece of Mahler. Well, you know what he said to me? He said, I have to go to the John. And he left the room. He said, I just have to go to the bathroom, Elaine. I don't want to talk about this. He was so upset that I didn't know who Mahler was. But never mind.
My guest is actress Elaine Stritch. A cousin of yours was the Cardinal of Chicago, and you went to a Catholic girl's school growing up.
Yes, indeed. I went to the Sacred Heart Convent for 12, count them, 12 years.
That's serious Catholic upbringing.
That is serious Catholic upbringing. I tried to inject an awful lot of laughs into it, but I liked the convent. I had a good time at the convent. Gave me a lot to play against, if you know what I mean.
Do you keep in touch with any of the nuns?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I had a family Oh, that's a Freudian slip. I had a school reunion 2 years ago and saw a lot of the nuns that taught me in school. It was terrific.
You've, I think, made a comment that a lot of the people that you went to the Sacred Heart Convent with sort of turned out to be sort of wild women in a way.
No. Not really. No, no wilder than I did. But I think that's an old wives' tale about being cooped up in the convent and then you get out and kick your heels up. Well, no, I don't. I guess that's exactly what I did. But the convent was fun, and it wasn't as, in my day, it wasn't as strict as, the word convent used to mean boarding school and never getting out, and it wasn't that way with me. I went to a day school, and, you know, it was just the Sacred Heart nuns. I was very fond of them. They were good teachers, and I had a wonderful time.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Elaine Stritch.
Thank you,
Sedge.
Have you seen, you, needless to say, have seen Sensibility and Sense?
I got a little preview.
I want to say a word about Jean Simmons. I had such a wonderful time working with her, and I think she shows qualities in this performance that will be used in the future. She's a very, very strong actress.
The story begins in 1937, and you play characters in 1986.
86, yes.
Would you get a sense of deja vu about 1937 when watching that part of the play?
No, I had nothing to do with those women. Nothing to do with those kind of women. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean?
Or just, yeah.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Mm-hmm. And anyway, in 1937, I hasten to add, I was 10 years old. So don't give me that I knew anything about those women, or I'll kill you. All right? But if you see Sensibility and Sense, you'll hardly believe that, but it's true. It really is true. Jean Simmons said to me on the phone the other night, she complimented me on doing a show with no makeup because I'm dying in Sensibility and Sense. And it really isn't difficult for me. I mean, that doesn't bother me at all. But it's, you know, it's kind of scary when you start to get older and you see yourself on the screen and you're playing, really playing an old lady. I told Theoni Aldrich, who's married to Tom Aldrich, I said to get out the sequins and the high heels as soon as possible. And I want to kick my heels up again because it scares you. You know, you think, oh, my God, I'm getting to be an old lady. So the next part is going to be lots of cocktails and cigarettes and jokes and sequins, okay?
Okay. Elaine Stritch stars in the American Playhouse production of Sensibility and Sense. She also appears in the CBS film Sparks. I'm Sage Thompson, and this is Fresh Air.